The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, what a round of fixtures it was in J1 as we head into the international break.
Yeah, we've really hit our straps, I think, in the league at the moment. Everything is getting tight at the bottom, and we've got, terrific goals and lots of goals to get into. It's, a great weekend to speak about, and you've got a big week coming up. First of all, happy birthday for tomorrow, and then congratulations on the gig for Wednesday.
Thank you very much on both of those accounts, mate. Yes, my birthday on Tuesday, listeners and viewers of the J-League's YouTube channel might recall that I did a commentary on the Levain Cup final, of course scheduled for last October, but ended up being played early in January between Tokyo and Kashiwa. Well, the league have asked me to do duty again this season, but yeah, they've also tacked on a leg of each of the semi-finals. So yeah, I'll be doing Nagoya versus FC Tokyo on Wednesday, very much with my neutrals hat on, I can assure you. And then on Sunday, doing the second leg of Cerezo and Urawa. So very much looking forward to both of those games. And yes, a busy week, but hopefully a very enjoyable one, mate.
Yeah, I look forward to listening to you. It was a bit weird that last time to flick on YouTube and then there you were. It was just, very strange. But, yeah, you did a great job last time. And I hear you have got to do it from home this time. Is that right?
Yes. A lot of things going remote these days, aren't they, Sam? And, yes, apparently commentating on football is, in the same boat. So, yes, I'll be doing it upstairs in my bedroom while hopefully wife and kids and puppy are, behaving themselves downstairs and not making too much noise. But, we'll wait and see. There might be a cameo from a couple of them during the game. But, hopefully we'll be able to keep the noise to a minimum. Yeah, so if you're interested in checking it out, it's a Wednesday night, a 7 o'clock kickoff between Nagoya and Tokyo. Obviously, that's a Japanese time. I believe it's geo-blocked in Japan and Thailand, but hopefully everywhere else in the world you'll be able to tune in and check out the game if you'd like to. And then it's Cerezo Urawa at 3 o'clock on Sunday. So, looking forward to both of those, as I said. We have a bumper episode lined up for you listeners. We're going guestless again. We did have a guest in mind, Sam and myself, for this week's episode, but we're a little bit late getting our approach in, getting in touch with the agent of said guest. So if you're curious about who it is, simply tune into this week's episode of J-Talk Extra Time, because, our mysterious guest will be appearing on that podcast. But luckily, Sam, we've got plenty of questions from two of our old favourites, Graham Freche and Akakichino 11, to keep us honest in this episode.
Yep, thank you to both of them for getting all the questions in. It definitely adds to the episode to deep dive into some of those. And let's get cracking. I know you've been trying to avoid this Tamagawa Classico for long enough.
Well, yes, unfortunately, it was a really decent performance from Tokyo. But yes, nothing to show for it. Before we get to that, though, Sam, let's just quickly touch on the last Wednesday's game. Sorry. I'll prolong the agony for myself even longer. So Kawasaki went to 12 points clear at the top of J1, having played a game more than the Yokohama F. Marinos after winning 3-1 at home over Kobe. Sam, they had to come from behind, though, after Yoshinori Muto netted in the 13th minute. Some penalty calamity from Frontale, with Akihiro Ienaga hitting the woodwork 9 minutes into the second half. But then just 2 minutes later, Frontale had another penalty, and Leandro Damião scored that. Then Thomas Vermaelen scored an own goal. It put Kawasaki 2-1 up. He diverted Miki Yamane's cross past Hiroki Ikura for an own goal. That was with 18 minutes to go. And then Ienaga made up for his penalty miss with a terrific shot across Ikura and inside his far post at 5 minutes from time. So, Sam, a come-from-behind victory. Kawasaki, they seem to be back into some sort of a groove, at least grinding out results, if nothing else.
Yeah, definitely. And this was one of their better performances in recent weeks. They've got lots of results and good results, but this was probably the better performance. First half, Kobe, probably with a better side. Muto and Osako, again, linked very well. They caused a lot of problems, and they were deserving of their lead. But second half, Kawasaki were a lot more like the Kawasaki we know. They got a little bit of help from whatever was going on with those penalty decisions. It was a manic few minutes there. But after they got back into the game, I think there was only really one winner. And it was a very good 3 points for them. And it set them up very nicely for this weekend's game.
It did indeed. So home again for the Tamagawa Classico against the FC Tokyo on Saturday. Frontale, again, I don't want to really claim a moral victory here, Sam, but it's one of the better Tokyo performances in recent Classico history. But as I say, simply a moral victory because the champions, the leaders, have ended up claiming all 3 points thanks to another goal from Leandro Damião. He had quite a tasty running battle with Joan Omari, especially throughout the first half, and not for the first time this season against an opponent. Damião had the last laugh when he headed in a Kyohei Noborizato cross as the clock ticked into first half stoppage time. Plenty of chances here and there for Tokyo, Sam. And as I say, as an all-around performance, I was satisfied with it. But, yeah, left feeling frustrated after failing to take at least one of those chances. I mean, first half, Tagawa and Dialton probably should have hit the target. The chances were of varying degrees of difficulty, but still, you want to work the keeper, and they were unable to do that. Then it looked like Kensuke Nagai was going to equalise, didn't it, 16 minutes from time when he rounded Jung Sung Ryong, but Jeziel scrambled back to clear just about off the line. And I mean, the Tokyo frustration had boiled over at full time, didn't it, after the free kick from Hirotaka Mita deep into second half stoppage time. I mean, there were 4 minutes shown on the board, and it was I think it was well into the seventh minute by the time Mita actually took his free kick. It's one of those that Miki Yamane jumps in the wall and it hits his arm and goes out for a corner. I guess you've seen them given. Tokyo were obviously very frustrated that it wasn't, and Masato Morishige was basically stood screaming in the face of the referee for a good 35, 40 seconds after the full-time whistle. I mean, the referee just wanted to do the post-game bow and get the hell out of there. But, I guess you can understand the Tokyo frustration over the course of the game, Sam, because it was a decent performance. But, yes, they've left with nothing.
Yeah, I think that incident was just kind of pure frustration because, as you say, I thought Tokyo were the better side. They dominated the possession. They had the better chances. Not too many that were clear-cut, and Jung wasn't worked enough when you did get those chances. Tagawa's was probably the most presentable in the first half, and then Nagai does everything right, but Jeziel does really well to kind of cover his goalkeeper and clear that one away. As for the handball, I can see the frustration. I think it's one where I can't remember who it was. Yamane, you said. He blocks it with his hand, but the hand is kind of tucked into towards his body, and in all this silhouette nonsense, I think it's still within that. It's not an unnatural position. The only issue I might have had, there is a slight hint of movement from Yamane away from his body to the ball, but it's probably not enough, and especially with the VAR, if the referee is given no penalty on the field, I don't think there's enough evidence to overturn that. So I think the correct decision was made, but I can understand the frustration because it was just a build-up of Tokyo having a lot of the play. They should have got something out of that game, but it was just one lapse of concentration, or I'd say when Marcinho got down the left and Takumi Nakamura, was it last season or the season before, had an absolute nightmare against Kawasaki. Generally speaking, I thought he played quite well in this game, but he didn't get any help in this situation from Tagawa, who was his right winger, just allowed Noborizato a free overlap, and there was not much Hasegawa could do, and Noborizato got in, and obviously that's where the goal came from. So, yeah, maybe it wasn't Tagawa's greatest outing in front of goal and helping out defensively, but, I mean, Kawasaki just, They got the 3 points. They won't care about how they got it. They're 12 points clear now, and it's going to take a very brave man to bet against them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, all of that. I concur. And, I think I'm right in saying it's five games in 15 days, rather, that they've just gotten through. And, yeah, after, obviously, Yokohama F. Marinos had really closed the gap, all of a sudden, yeah, you look at it, and it's 12 points, albeit with F. Marinos having a game in hand. But, yeah, Frontale, they were definitely challenged. They've steadied the ship. They've started to rack up the wins again in very effective ways and in varying ways as well. And yeah, I think they can be excused for having a slightly off day on Saturday. But yeah, they as we've both said, they still did enough to win the game and also to keep Tokyo at bay. And yeah, they deserve massive credit for that. And well, on the way to a fourth title in 5 years, it would appear, and they can now rest up over the international break, of course, with no Levain Cup commitments to distract them. All right, well, F. Marinos did initially close the gap to 9 points after a win of their own on Friday night away at Shonan, Sam. And I think this game kind of followed a similar pattern to the one that followed it on Saturday, or rather this set the tone for the one on Saturday, where, to me at least, it appeared from the highlights that Shonan had the better of this game and the better of the chances. But F. Marinos got the only goal of the game 21 minutes into the second half through the Golden Boot clubhouse leader Daizen Maeda, who slid in to score from inside the 6-yard box after Teruhito Nakagawa did terrifically to out-hustle Hirokazu Ishihara to a ball down the right. He surged into the box and squared for Maeda, who, yeah, tapped in or scored from, 6 yards, 3 or 4 yards out, rather. And that was all F. Marinos needed, despite Shonan having a lot of pressure, Sam, and some pretty presentable chances as well.
Yeah, I thought Shonan were the better side in this game, especially in the first half. I think it was one of the worst performances I've seen from this Marinos side. They were just giving the ball away so sloppily, and it was just all over the pitch. I mean, they didn't seem to get anything going. They played without Marcos Jr. to start with, which is a very rare incident where he's not in the starting lineup, and it just nothing really connected for them. And Shonan put a lot of pressure on. They kept possession well themselves, and they had a few chances. Takioka dealt with pretty much everything. There was, again, nothing, like no massive clear-cut chances, you wouldn't say, until Wellington's header towards the end, and that's really Shonan's problem. There's not quite enough cutting edge. They do rely a little bit too much on crosses into the box and Wellington getting his head on things, and yeah, they didn't quite break Marinos down, but they were definitely, I thought, the better side for long periods of the game. But it was just a little bit of moment of quality from F. Marinos Nakagawa, kind of rolling back the years a couple of years, just great pace to get in behind, and it was just like the typical Marinos goal. If you asked me to describe one, it was a winger gets the byline, cuts it back, and Maeda taps it in, and yeah, that worked. It was a good one. It got them a little bit settled. Marinos had been a bit shaky recently, and just again, it was just a case of getting the 3 points on the board. But yeah, they'll have to play a lot better than that in the last few games of this season if they've going to stand any chance of catching Kawasaki. But I think it is pretty much done. I mean, I know everything that I say kind of goes against it, it doesn't really happen, but this probably guarantees Marinos the title. But yeah, I just can't see it. It's got to be Frontale now. Any objection?
Yeah, no, as we said, after they've steadied the ship so effectively in the past couple of weeks, Kawasaki, yeah, I mean, all signs point to them seeing it out. They've obviously got 6 games left to play, and again, we should have worked out the maths before we came on about how many points they actually need to wrap it up. Of course, keeping in mind, as we've mentioned so many times in recent weeks, that the top two meet on the final day of the season. But it's a massive hill for F. Marinos to climb, and they're obviously relying on Kawasaki dropping so many points before the end of the season. Yeah, I just can't see it myself either. The top two not at their best, but both claiming important 1-0 victories. But Shonan then, let's move on to talk about the relegation dogfight, because it was a huge week down at the foot of the table with four of the bottom six claiming victories. Of course, that does mean that the effect of those victories were somewhat dulled when other teams around them were winning. Obviously, teams like Yokohama FC and Oita would have been expecting maybe Tokushima to drop points against Tosu, but no, Vortis went and smashed the suddenly wobbly, as I said last week's episode, at Tosu, Sam. So we will get onto that game now. But it was an absolute horror show, wasn't it, for Park Il-gyu. Tokushima took advantage of his walkabout tendencies. And, what they've done is they've hauled themselves out of the relegation zone of Vortis for the first time since late August. And it owed a lot to a first-half brace from Yuki Kakita. They were his first league goals for 6 months. And then Musasha Bakenga, he put the icing on the cake on the hour, his first league goal for the club. A priceless 3 points for Tokushima, but as I said, Sam, an absolute nightmare for Park Il-gyu, who I guess he rolled back the years to the early Ange Postecoglou days.
Yeah, it's never a great sight when two of the goals see no goalkeeper in sight as the ball crosses the line. And it was a pretty awful afternoon for Sagam Tosu, but all the credit has to go to Tokushima. I mean, for the entirety of this season, or whenever Piatas came in, they've just been playing this side-to-side, passing for the sake of passing, going nowhere, and they completely transformed that in this game. They went 4-4-2, whenever they got the ball, they looked to go early to Kakita, who ran the channel superbly, and Tosu's high line just couldn't deal with it. He got in a couple of times. The first goal is really well taken. It's a very good goal to set them up. And then, the second one, he just breaks through that offside trap. Park desperately tries to come for it, gets nowhere near it. Yeah, and it's a little bit of a tap-in after that. Well, it was a difficult tap-in, I suppose. But, a good finish from Kakita. And then similar with Bakenga, where they're just passing it out from the back, trying to get out of a hole. Higuchi doesn't really help Park with the pass back to him. Park falls over and Bakenga takes full advantage. And, they just fell apart, Sagam Tosu. And it was, I don't know if it's like just a complete lack of confidence now or what after the loss last week and now this one. But, Tokushima, I think, have to have all the credit because their game plan was a lot more positive. It caused a lot, quite a few issues for Tosu, and they never really got into the game after that, Tosu. It was a wonderful performance from Vortis, and I just really hope that they carry on in that sort of manner, because Kakita, as you say, it was 6 months without a goal, but it was 6 months basically looking back at his team and playing head tennis as they passed it sideways and at no point looked for him. So I'm very happy for him that he's getting a few rewards, because he works his socks off up there, and it was two very well taken goals, if slightly helped by the Tosu goalkeeper.
Absolutely brilliant from Kakita. I mean, the first one, he raced clear from inside his own half, didn't he? And, to have the composure to then finish as well as he did past the Park. And then, check out the highlights, listeners. They're pretty ordinary pieces of goalkeeping from Park, who, had his happy feet resurface. I mean, as you say, Sam, the Bakenga's goal, the third, he basically trod on the ball on the edge of the box, didn't he? I mean, what he was doing out there in the first place remains to be seen. But, was not Park Il-gyu or Tosu's finest day, but yes, all credit due to Tokushima. And as we say, they've hauled themselves out of the bottom four for the first time since late August. So both of our questioners had missives for us to consider in this game, Sam. So while we were talking about Tokushima, Akakichino 11 said that Vortis seemed to be getting their act together now, while also, as we've mentioned, and we'll come on to Yokohama FC and Oita, picked up wins. So from here, do we think that Tokushima will make it to safety?
Oh, it's just a $64,000 question or whatever. We always do a little bit of an overreaction every Monday doing these podcasts, and obviously Tokushima did put in a fantastic performance at the weekend. They've definitely got the quality in the squad to stay out of trouble, and as long as they play in that manner that they did yesterday, I think they've got every chance. Looking at the teams below them, like Oita, I don't see them putting a string of results together the same as Sendai and Shonan. It's probably going to be between those two, but I do think there's a little bit more about this Tokushima side. So I mean, I'm sorry, Takashima fans, but yes, I think you'll stay up.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, again, it's recency bias because we've just seen Takashima win in such impressive fashion against Tosu and indeed make it two straight wins for just the second time this season. Whereas Shonan haven't won in five, but again, their last two, they've lost to the current top two. So while they've slipped into the drop zone, now 2 points behind Takashima, for me, while obviously the pressure is building at the Lemon Gas Stadium, I agree with you, Sam, that it's between those two for 16th spot. And if, again, I never bet, I might as well just set my money on fire. But, if I had to pick between the two at the moment, even though the last few results haven't been as good, I would still slightly give the edge to Shonan. But, it is a coin flip, isn't it? And while Vortis have the edge, again, I wonder whether Belmare's goal difference advantage might end up paying off down the road. Yeah. But, obviously still so many games still to be played. And obviously we can't put marker, let alone pencil through any of the other ones below Shonan. So for now, yes, the Takashima bank the points and, as we say, move out of the bottom four. Whereas Graham Freche wanted to know our thoughts on Tosu. Graham Freche says, back-to-back 3-0 losses against the teams and games that should have been winnable for Tosu. Are they running out of gas, or is there a different reason for consecutive performances like that? I think we've said, in the course of the last couple of months, especially since the Olympic break, Sam, in the summer when they lost a couple more important players, that their squad has just been stretched and stretched to new limits, seemingly on a monthly basis. So, Johnny and I put a line through them for the ACL spots a couple of weeks ago, and I guess they're slightly just returning to earth after spending so long up in the giddy heights of the top four this season.
Yeah, I think so. They have overachieved all season. They've done fantastically well, but once you lose a couple of players, and then in this game they were without Koizumi and Nakano and Yamashita, and they've got such a small squad that if you take three starting players out of that team, you're left with very little. I mean, Yuto Iwasaki started this game and he couldn't get a game at Jeff in J2, so that's the kind of squad that they're working with at the moment. So yeah, I just think they've just played so well. I just think they've just kind of ran out of steam, and I think they're just kind of, they'd like the season to end, I think, now. I don't imagine the off-the-field stuff is helping. This week, the J-League did confirm that they are going through with that investigation of Kim Myung-hui. So, that can't be beneficial. And I just think, they've run out of gas now, I think, Sagan Tosu. And you might want to just avoid the rest of the season if you're a Tosu supporter.
Yeah, so they might even be slipping behind the likes of Fukuoka and Tosu if those two can rediscover their mojo after disappointing defeats on the weekend. But what a season it's been to this point for Tosu. Bucking the odds on such a regular basis. But it appears that the grind of the season has finally caught up with them as they have slipped down to seventh in the last couple of weeks. All right, so again, kudos to Vortis, and a chin up, Tosu. Maybe you can rediscover some mojo over the international break. You could certainly do with the break, I'm sure. All right, let's go from Takashima right down to the foot of the table, Sam, where one of the more surprising results, I don't know, or was it, was Kashima, who entered the match day and indeed finished it in sixth in the table, losing 2-1 at home to the bottom club, Yokohama FC. Although, as I said, was it such a surprise after Yokohama FC was so impressive in the Yokohama Derby last week? Snatching a point at the death against F. Marinos. They've travelled up to Kashima, and two first-half goals. The first of them an absolutely brilliant free kick from 25 yards from their captain, Tatsuki Seko, in the 17th minute, and then Rio Germain scored 3 minutes before half-time. Yokohama FC certainly flipped the script that a lot of us thought would how this game would pan out. It just wasn't Antlers' day yet again, was it?
No, not at all. And well, we should have seen it coming because they won last week, so they were always going to lose this game. But yeah, it was another really good performance from Yokohama FC, carrying on from the Yokohama derby. They were maybe a touch unlucky not to win that one, and they just they've got, maybe it helps being at the bottom, or that they've just got nothing to lose. They're allowed to just go out and attack teams. And yes, Kashima had quite a bit of the ball second half, but Yokohama FC were always a threat on the counter. Salamanero, not quite as good as the week before, but he still played very well. Him and Matsuo have a really good understanding that they've managed to develop. And they scored that Seko free kick is top quality. And yeah, they got themselves 2-0 up before half-time through Jermaine. And they just it was a really positive performance. I think I got a little bit ahead of myself on Twitter by saying that they would go and get out of this and then Tokushima won, so they're now 7 points adrift with, what was it, 7 games to go, so it seems highly unlikely. But I've had a quick look at their fixtures, and they're really interesting. They've got Vortis next after the international break. They've also got Shonan, Sagantosu, who might be in 3-4. Avispa have got a little to play for. They've still got Kobe, which is their one really difficult game, but also Oita and Sapporo to end the season. So it's, if you're going to pull off a miracle, that is probably the fixture list you would want. Mm. So I think they're going to keep themselves interested for as long as possible. It'd be the greatest of great escapes for this Yokohama FC team to, from where they have been for a lot of this season, to get out of it. But it's not against the realms of possibility. But yeah, they need performances like they've put in the last couple of games, where they've been fantastic, and you can't really speak too highly of them. Yeah, terrific performance.
Yeah, brilliant. As you say, nothing to lose, and they've really been able to express themselves in the last couple of games. I guess for them, the international break probably came at the wrong time. They probably would have liked to play their next game the very next day. But they do deserve enormous credit for keeping Kashima at bay in the second half as well, don't they? Because Antlers reduced their arrears to 2-1 37 seconds into the second half, when ISA Wada headed in a close range cross from Ryotaro Araki. But there, with 45 minutes to go and at least get a point at Kashima, and obviously they would have hoped to go on and win it, basically the closest they came for the rest of the second half was a tame Leo Silva header that was straight at Sven de Brodersen deep into second half stoppage time. So yes, they were good going forward again, Yokohama FC, but again, often maligned, and for good reason, their defence. But yes, they were able to keep the very hot and cold Antlers side at arm's reach for the entirety of the second half.
Yeah, they were terrific. I mean, Gabriel was back for this game. He's made such a difference when he's played, a terrific signing. And it did get Hakamada out of the side, and Ino has not been playing. So they've changed it up a little bit, but there's a lot of experience. Takahashi's also in there, so it's a lot more of a settled, and there's a bit more know-how in that defence. And they were, so considering the players that Kashima have got, they didn't get close to a goal after getting that one back. It was a really terrific performance from Yokohama FC. And like, if they are to do this miracle run, every time, like in the Premier League every season, you say you've got to get to that magic 40 point mark. Do you think that they're going to need as many points as that? That would require 6 victories from their final 7, which seems unlikely. Or do you think they could get away with a little bit less?
Ooh, it's a good question, and a nice segue there, because Akakichino 11 asked a similar question to us, Sam. It's considered in a 20-team league that 40 points is the magical mark. To be honest, I'm not sure that that Tokushima or perhaps even Shimizu in 15th will get to 40. So I don't think you will need that many, perhaps. When you mentioned before some of the fixtures that Yokohama FC still have to play, and as you said, 7 points from safety as it stands, and with obviously Vortis looking in decent form and Shonan looking to bounce back after defeats against the top two, it's going to take. I mean, they would surely have to win at least 5 of their last 7, and that would get them onto 37. And whether that would be enough, I don't know. But if talking about Yokohama FC specifically, I think they've got too much traffic to climb over. But as to what sort of a points total you might need, you know, at a pinch, I'd say maybe 38 might be enough this season. And again, if we think it's between Tokushima and Shauna, and that means the three more wins for Tokushima, and well, Shauna would probably need three and a couple of draws or four wins for them. So I don't know. Can you? Yeah, it's difficult, obviously, to do the maths in your head, and obviously knowing. Not knowing all of the fixtures remaining, who plays who, but yeah, do you think say 37, 38 might be enough?
Yeah, I was around about that mark. I was thinking Shonan, what, seven games ago, maybe the best they can hope for is maybe three victories, is what I would say, and that takes them to 36, so 37 for Vortis would be enough, so that's about the level I'm at. I don't think you need 40 points, but then again, I didn't think most of the bottom six would win this weekend, so you never really know. But as Akakichino 11 mentioned, I think it was Kashua went down with 41 in an 18 team league, so with this division you never truly know. But I think, yeah, around about that 37 mark is probably going to be enough.
Yep. Oh, just to get that right, Akakichino 11 will want us to get that right. Yeah, it was Jubilo that he mentioned in his his message.
Sorry.
But yes, no, yeah.
What did Kashua go down on? It was a pretty similar number.
Yeah.
Just trying to salvage myself from misremembering. Okay, yeah, just check that up. And Kashua did go down on 39 points, which is still a large total, the second bottom in an 18-team league. But, yeah, that season was absolutely incredible with, five teams finishing on 41 with Jubilo in that relegation place. Could you see similar happening this season? Obviously not the same level of points, but, yeah, going into that final day with a lot of teams in and around the same level of points.
Actually, yeah, that's... Yeah, very intriguing prospect, isn't it? Yeah, that had slipped my mind, of course. That was Ange Postecoglou's first season in charge of F. Marinos when they finished 12th, and then, of course, they went and won the league the next year. But, yeah, five teams all finishing and knotted together on 41, and Iwata going into the playoff on 41 points. And as you say, yeah, Reysol going down on 39. That had certainly never happened in J1 before. But yes, I mean, obviously a huge win for Shimizu over the weekend to give them a little bit more breathing space. But yeah, when you look at the likes of Tokushima on 29 points, Shonan 27, Oita 24, Sendai 23, and Yokohama FC 22. Yeah, right as we get right down to the wire, you could certainly see at least two or three teams on the same or very, very close together number of points, and whether they might end up on the same total, I guess it's probably still unlikely. But they're certainly not an enormous amount between them. But again, with the quality down there that they've or the lack of quality that they've displayed throughout the season, yeah, it's just a matter of how many points they're going to be able to eke out in the last couple of months of the season. But Yokohama FC, again, an absolutely terrific victory for them, and well-deserved away at Kashima, who, as you said, Sam, they won last week, so they were destined to lose again here, as they've now alternated wins and losses in their last six league games, and that certainly takes some doing. All right, well, we did actually have a question, not necessarily performance-related, on Antlers from Grum Freche, Sam. It's about the prospects of Kashima getting a new stadium. Of course, a lot of people who have been up there would like it to be a lot closer to Tokyo, but I presume it's still going to be in the Kashima city limits. But yes, with the old one apparently damaged by the earthquake, the club have decided to move ahead with plans to build a new ground. I don't know if you have been across that news recently and have any thoughts on it, but Graham Fretcher, you wanted to know what we thought about it.
Yeah, I know there was a bit of a protest from Kashima supporters at the end of the game complaining that they shouldn't be spending money on new stadiums when the team aren't performing on the pitch. So, yeah, it might be a bit of a struggle up there. If it's damaged, I don't think there's much you can do. You're going to have to get a new stadium. I know Graham Freche indicated that you might want a more of an intimate stadium, a smaller one than the one that they have now. You a lot of the games, you have far too many empty seats at Kashima, and that's the case in certain other stadiums, like the Nissan Stadium. You'd ask any Yokohama if Marinos supporter, where would you prefer watching them? They'd probably go Mitsuzawa from that kind of everyone on top of each other and that atmosphere that can create. So, yeah, if they do go down that route, yeah, I'd like it maybe a little bit smaller, but, I mean, it'd be a shame to lose that ground. I mean, thinking back to the ACL 2018 when they won it, some of the fixtures that they played there towards the end, there was a terrific atmosphere at that ground, and it really can be when that wall is, well, when Kashima are playing well, the wall behind the goal is really going for it. So it would be a shame, but I'm sure that they've got certain plans in place, and yeah, you'd prefer a more intimate ground, and I'm sure an FC Tokyo sport, you might on occasion prefer a more intimate ground than Ajinomoto.
Yes, most definitely. No question about that. But, yeah. Well, I think, yeah, the club would one day like to move into the new national stadium. But, again, that's not football specific, is it? So, yes, I think that's just the life of an FC Tokyo supporter. We're doomed to always play in a stadium with a running track around it. But there you go. That's part of life. But yeah, we hope that Kashima, if they, as we say, it looks like it's going to go ahead. So we hope they can get the new stadium built fairly quickly and get their side in there and make it feel like home. All right. But again, Yokohama FC winning, as did Oita Trinita, who came into the match day in 19th in the table, but this win saw them leapfrog Vegalta Sendai and move up to the heady heights of 18th. They hosted Cerezo Osaka on Sunday and won 1-0 through a Yamato Machida volley 11 minutes before half time. Before that, Kohei Issa, the home team striker, had forced a good save from Kim Jin-hyun in the 8th minute, and then Cerezo's best chance of the first half, just past the half hour, came when Takashi Inui's first time shot from Adam Taggart's cross came back off the bar. But then, 11 minutes before the break, as I mentioned, Machida volleyed in Yuki Kagawa's cross from the left. 5 minutes after the break, Shun Takagi saved Mutsuki Kato's shot as Cerezo looked to equalise. And then late on, Takagi saved superbly from the substitute Yoshito Okubo's fierce low drive. And Yuto Misao, the home defender, had to hack the ball away from inside the six-yard box after Kato had poked the ball past Takagi. So, Yokohama FC's win, Sam, the effectiveness of it was slightly diminished, I suppose, by so many of the teams around them winning. Oita might be feeling in the same boat, but this was simply a win they had to have, so I guess they can't really be too concerned about what the teams around them were doing.
No, it was hard to win this one. It was a decent performance from them. They've a lot of the games and recently they've started pretty well and always had reasonably good first halves, but not been able to continue that and finally being broken down. And I mean, maybe a better team than Cerezo would have. They did have good chances, but Takagi had one of his better games in goal. The save, as you mentioned, from Okubo was absolutely terrific. But I just think Cerezo may have had half an eye on the Levain Cup in midweek. They dropped both fullbacks. Okuno was also on the bench, so it wasn't really the strongest team they could have put out. But I mean, you can understand it. They're in mid-table, very little to play for in the league. And Oita took advantage of it. They finally brought Machida back in, who's their top scorer and had been dropped almost pretty regularly for the last 10 games. I'm not really sure why, but yeah, he proved his manager was incorrect in doing that, in coming on and scoring in this game. And yeah, it gives them a little bit of belief. Again, it was like they dropped to the bottom of the table, I think, before this game. So it was just a case of, we've got to go out and go and get this victory. And then kind of maybe that freedom helped them. And it was a decent enough performance and it gives them another chance because... But yeah, they won't have been delighted by Vortis winning, so it's still a little bit of a mountain for them to climb. But yeah, positive for Oita, and it's great for a neutral because it's just setting up a really exciting race.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, so we do have a couple more games related to the relegation zone to cover, but we are literally halfway through the weekend's match day 31 fixtures. So we will pause for a quick hit of music and then we'll be back for a part two of this week's podcast. Okay, welcome back. Shimizu S-Pulse started the match day outside the drop zone, and they have a slightly more breathing room over 17th place to Shonan after a 2-1 away win over one of the form teams in the competition. Of course, we mentioned they were a joint top of the form table last week. Vispa Fukuoka, Sam, along similar lines to the victories that we've already discussed for Tokushima, Yokohama FC, and Oita, any 3 points would have done for Shimizu, but the fact that they scored two excellent goals and appeared to be good value for this victory will hopefully give them some confidence going forward after the international break.
Yeah, definitely should. I thought they were very good in this game. Avispa weren't quite to their performance levels of recent games. I think they were a little bit all over the place defensively, which is not necessarily something you expect from them. Mai and Groli got into a mix-up that led to the first goal for Shimizu, and they just weren't quite as tight as they had been. I don't know if it was just a case of relaxing slightly. And I mean, this was Shimizu's first victory, I think, since June away from home, so a timely one for that. We got Carlinhos back into the side, and it adds a little bit more. They're not quite as reliant on Santana when Carlinhos plays, and Nishizawa had a lot better game than recently. I mean, I think it was two seasons ago that we were raving about Nishizawa and his performances, and he's just kind of gone missing for the last 18 months or so. But yeah, his ball in for Carlinhos was absolutely perfect, and yeah, with Murakami just sprinting out to him, it was very brave of Carlinhos to just get ahead of him. He was taken out completely by the goalkeeper, but yeah, it was a good finish from Shimizu, and they held on just about, even though there was a little bit of pressure coming at the end of the game from Avispa when they finally brought John Mary on, because I don't believe I'm saying this, but they missed Wanmar up front. They missed his energy, his kind of him put himself about. They didn't really have that sort of threat. Bruno Mendes started, but it didn't look very fit. So they finally got that with Mary, who really should be playing every game. In my opinion, he's the best striker that they have. And he always seems to score when he plays, and he did here. But yeah, apparently he's not quite in favour. He is for the Cameroon national team, but not for Avispa Fukuoka. So there we go. But they got themselves back into it a little bit, Avispa. But Shimizu held on decently well, as Lotina sides usually can be relied upon to do. So a very good result for Shimizu. It keeps them... yeah, a little bit of cushion, as you mentioned, and it's too early to say that they're safe or anything like that. But yeah, a vital victory, especially given the other results.
Yeah, most definitely. So they were good goals, as we mentioned. Thiago Santana lashed in the 27th minute after Masaaki Murakami had saved from Santana's strike partner, Noriaki Fujimoto. And then, brave is a great word to describe Carlinhos' effort 3 minutes into the second half, isn't it, Sam? As you say, an excellent ball into the box from Kenta Nishizawa. And, Carlinhos, the commitment he showed to continue his run and, connect with his volley. And it was a spectacular goal in and of itself, let alone the fact that, yes, milliseconds after he'd made contact, he was sent flying into the air by the onrushing Murakami. Certainly paid the price for his first goal in a long time, Carlinhos. But, what a terrific goal it was, and a priceless one for S-Pulse, as you say, Sam, because, Fukuoka did awaken from their slumber late on. They hadn't had the best of days going forward, but John Mary got them back into it in the ninth minute, and then they probably should have at least tested Shuichi Gonda more than they did in the last the last 10 minutes after Mary's goal, when Watari screwed an off-balance shot wide, and then right at the death with the very last action of the game, Tatsuki Nara, it would have been a big one for Neil Debnam, I'm sure, to enjoy. Couldn't quite get his stooping header on target after John Mary had headed Jordy Crooks's free kick across the 6-yard box. So, I guess Fukuoka can be excused for a slightly off day at the office. Sam, as you mentioned earlier, when we were talking about some of the other relegation zone teams who still have to play at Fukuoka, they don't have an enormous amount to play for, except for finishing above FC Tokyo, of course. But, for Shimizu, any 3 points required, and they got them. And, full credit to them, and keeps them now. Puts them 5 points outside the drop zone as they've moved 3 points further clear of Shonan, of course. All right, well, Sendai, I guess, apart from Shonan, were the other big losers, although they didn't lose in match day 31, but they did lose the lead away at Kashiwa, Sam, on Saturday, and at the end of the day, with the Oita winning on Sunday, that's seen Sendai slip to 19th in the table. Vegalta took the lead in the 10th minute, thanks to Kamen Togashi's fine finish, but a fine Kim Sung-gyu save from Kunimitsu Sekiguchi's close-range blast in first-half stoppage time kept hosts Kashiwa Reysol in the game. Then Reysol were much better after the break, and they finally equalised with 12 minutes left when Yuta Kami's strike from 20 yards bounced in front of Jakub Slovic and eluded the keeper's attempt to parry it clear. And it could have gotten even worse for Sendai at the death, couldn't it, Sam? Because Kamiya, Cristiano and Richardson all missed the target with late chances as the teams ultimately had to settle for a point apiece.
Yeah, I think at the end of it, Sendai would probably just settle for that point and they'd be quite happy with it. It was just really frustrating to watch them. As I said with Yokohama, they were always going forward and Oita were similar, but Sendai, they got the goal, they took the lead, and then just as long as the game went on, they just retreated and retreated and just allowing Kashiwa to come onto them, and Kashiwa have enough players about them to get a goal as they did. And it's just looking at that Kashiwa team, they're so poor defensively. You've got to go at them and create things, and they'll let you in for another few opportunities. But Sendai just didn't do that. They maybe just didn't have the belief about it and just thought, well, we're 1-0 up, we're just going to protect this as much as possible. And in the end, I think that's cost them, and it might cost them going forward this season. There's just not that spark about them to go and try and kill a game when they take the lead. I mean, it's not happened too often, but they do want to just protect anything that they have, and they usually come undone. And for Kashiwa, I think they would be disappointed after their second half performance not to have gone on and won this game with everyone winning below them. I mean, it's still a mountain to climb for, say, Shonan, who was 7 points behind Kashiwa, for Kashiwa to drop into that, but they're still not safe, and for them, they just want to get this season over and done with and be as safe as quickly as possible. So they'll be desperate for maybe two wins will be enough for them, but yeah, while they're still in it, they still can't sit comfortably at the moment.
No, absolutely correct. All right, so Graham Fritsche also had a relegation dogfight-related question for us, Sam, but I think we've kind of touched on all the different permutations so far. So I think as we exit our drop zone conversation for this week, and again, everything will probably flip on its head again when we return after the international break in 2 weeks. But my Bitcoin would be on Shonan staying up from the current bottom five, and if I recall correctly, yours would be your money would be edging slightly towards Tokushima at this point.
Yeah, and that's without the Yokohama miracle that I accidentally predicted will happen. So at the moment I think the current bottom four will go down, but yeah, who knows what we'll be looking at this next time in 2 weeks.
Yep, absolutely fair enough then. All right, so let's return back up the table and talk about some of the teams that are battling it out for a third spot in the table. The incumbents were Nagoya, but we won't be talking about them next because they've been supplanted in third place on goal difference by Vissel Kobe. And, Mr. Mikitani, if he was watching on, either from the stands at the Noriview Stadium or from his palatial estate, he must have been very, very pleased indeed, as his Galactico project was basically on full display on Saturday, wasn't it, Sam? It all got going in the eighth minute when Yuya Osako netted his first J1 goal in 8 years. Then we had a first-half brace from Iniesta, both goals deflected, but he'll certainly take them. Andres Iniesta, obviously a huge name at Kobe and in world football, always making headlines when he's on the score sheet. And then Yeah, I mean, it got even better with Yoshinori Muto, and then the new arrival, fellow new arrival, Bojan Krukic, scoring his first goal for the club late on. Reds could feel a bit hard done to, couldn't they? Especially, I mean, with the deflections on both of Andres Iniesta's goals, and they had what appeared to be a perfectly legitimate goal disallowed for a foul on the keeper, Hiroki Ikura, in first half stoppage time. But on the day, as a whole, Reds were outplayed as Kobe were able to really express themselves.
Yeah, it was. There's no question about who deserved to win this game. Kobe, I thought, were fantastic. Osako, Muto and Iniesta, yeah, just caught the combination was fantastic. Muto, it hasn't taken any time for him to get used to it, but Osako in the last game or so has just come into his own as well. And if he's scoring, Muto's scoring, then Kobe are going to get a lot of goals. And even maybe not the most heralded of the names that they've got in there, but Sergei Samper's return into midfield was vital. Adds that little bit of bite to the midfield, and he's always looking to go forward quickly. I think he was playing a key role in the third goal with his tackle on Koizumi in midfield. And yeah, just the pressing from Kobe, they didn't allow Reds to play out from the back, and Reds got caught a few times with some really sloppy play, and just generally they had a really poor game. I mean, any ball into the box they just didn't seem to react to, and it was, yeah, it's just another sign that it's going to take a little while for this Rodriguez project to really come, to bear fruit completely. They've played well in spurts this season, but there are games like this where they just kind of look all over the place, and they will be upset. I think there were some complaints over the awarding of the free kick for Iniesta's first goal. It might have been seen as a little bit soft, but yeah, I mean, those free kicks are kind of always given. You feel hard done to if it's against your team. But definitely the disallowed goal, whether it would have made any difference, I don't really know. It would have made it 3-1. But yeah, Shibata was pushed by Gokay into Ikura, so it wasn't really, not a lot he could have done about it. I don't know why the goal was ruled out and not changed by VAR. It definitely had enough time, because Ikura spent a good few minutes on the floor, definitely making the most of the impact. But yeah, other than that, yeah, they started the second half pretty well, Reds. I mean, they got their goal, and you think 3-1, maybe you can get back into it. But yeah, just defensively, they were just very passive, very easy for Kobe to get back in front. And yeah, the two goals in the second half that Kobe conceded were very poor from an Arara perspective. And what have you made actually of this Reds team? And do you see enough signs that next season, with one or two players, they could be an ACL or even a title challenger? Or do you think there's still a little way to go from that?
Well, I think with the names they've been able to put together, I think Rodriguez is probably the right man to take them forward. So, yeah, if I was a Reds fan, you've just got to shake off a result like this as a bad day at the office when, again, you didn't get the rub of the green, you didn't get the bounce of the ball, you know, whichever cliche you want to use. It just wasn't your day. Three deflected goals. I mean, the Osako one is a good finish, but again, that deflects off Alex Schultz as it goes past Nishikara as well, doesn't it? So they were, it's just one of those games where it didn't go for them. But again, at the end of the day, in a league like this, you can lose 5-1 one week and then come back after the international break, win your next three, and Reds would almost certainly be ahead of Kobe at that point, because they're still only 3 points behind both Kobe and Nagoya. So, they're still in the ACL, well and truly in the ACL hunt this season, Reds. And again, if you're a Reds supporter and you've just seen your team put in an ordinary display like that, you would probably think, well, no, I don't want to be in the ACL next year and have to endure days like that in continental play. But, yeah, they have... They have shown flashes, and indeed they did in this game, as you say, Sam. And they'd gotten themselves a lifeline when Koizumi bundled in Sekine's low cross. But then, just when they were getting a foothold in the game, Yamuto glanced his header in from an Iniesta cross. Literally 4 minutes after Reds had cut the lead to two goals, Kobe got their three-goal cushion back, and then that was that. And Krukic obviously applied the finishing touches. But, you put this result behind you, and a Reds supporter should be full of... expectation, not just for next season, but I think for the end of this year as well, because they're still right in it. And Akakichino 11, you could feel the frustration seeping out of his email, couldn't you, Sam? He was disappointed overall at the Reds display, but also at the officiating, especially the disallowed goal. And as you mentioned earlier, perhaps there was a foul against a Reds player before the Kobe were awarded the free kick for Iniesta's first goal. But if you can shake off a result like that, if you're a Reds fan, then for me anyway, I think they've got to be looking forward positively. But actually, something that might have gone under the radar a little bit in recent weeks, Sam, and I recall that after recording last week's episode that I wanted to get your thoughts on it then, and the fact that it's happened again this weekend means I can ask you within the natural flow of the episode, and that is what's happened to Kasper Juncker. He was, according to some esteemed observers, he should have been in our J1 team of the half season, even though he'd only played, I think it was 7 games up to the halfway point, when he basically came in and looked like he was going to set the world on fire. It's now 4 games in a row that he has not started. We wondered how Ricardo Rodriguez would fit Yoshio Koizumi and Ataru Esaka into the same team. They're both playing, and Juncker's not.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. They don't seem to... Like, Esaka has come in and played very well in that central striker role, and he hasn't really figured out, a way maybe... Because if you want to bring Juncker in, then you have to push out Esaka wide, and maybe you don't get the best of him there, or you have to drop Koizumi. So it's not really worked. They haven't figured it out yet. I'd still be playing Juncker, and there is still a little bit of a feeling that there's a little bit of a fitness issue with him that's coming from this. I know he missed a couple of games with his cheekbone fracture. I can't imagine that's still affecting him. But yeah, Rodriguez did mention ahead of this game that Juncker wasn't quite to full fitness, which is why he's only been playing like bits, maybe in the second half. He came on at half-time here. But you saw glimpses at the start of that second half, the way that they built up towards that first goal with Juncker and Koizumi, that there is that still that good link, and I'm sure that he'll get it to work with Esaka. So it might just be one where over the winter they have got a bit of time to really think of a formation that works best for all three of them, whether that's a shift to a three at the back and maybe have Koizumi and Esaka just in behind Juncker. Maybe they just don't have the personnel to working at the moment, but I'm sure with the quality of all three of those players, eventually something will be figured out and they'll all play. But yes, I don't think Juncker's going to make the team of the second half of the season, and only an idiot would have put him in earlier in the year.
Fair enough then. All right, well, a banner day, as we said, for the Vissel Kobe Galactico project, with pretty much all of their big names getting on the score sheet. And as Sam mentioned as well, Sergei Samper playing an important role from the centre of the park. So we do have another 5-1 result to cover from the weekend. But before we get to that, the team that Kobe have usurped in third spot in the table are, of course, Nagoya, who now trail Kobe on goal difference, having played a game more after they headed over to Hiroshima on Sunday, but lost 1-0 to a Sanfrecce side, Sam, who, as we mentioned in recent weeks, don't have an awful lot to play for to the end of the season, but did appear to put in a decent shift here. And, Hayato Araki, his commitment was certainly on full display when he orchestrated the move that led to Yuya Asano's goal. Araki poked the ball away from Jakub Swiatkowski in just inside his own half, and then slid in full-blooded on Kazuki Nagasawa inside the centre circle before releasing Yuya Asano, who drove into the box and fired across Mitch Langerak and in off his far post. Not an awful lot seemed to happen either side of that, Sam. That was the big highlight of this game. But full credit for goes to Hiroshima for an excellent goal, but also a decent enough performance.
Yeah, they've played pretty well, actually, the last few weeks. Once it was kind of confirmed that they've got nothing to play for, they've sort of played with a little bit more freedom. There wasn't too much of an attacking intent from either side in this game, besides the goal. But, yeah, they played reasonably well, and they dealt with the limited amount that Nagoya threw at them. Nagoya, I mean, I can't defend Ficadenti this week with his team selection and the way that they were set up, and I'm sure Granfrecci was pretty disgusted with the way that they played in this game. They didn't start Mateus again. Maybe they're looking at the Levain Cup in midweek, but Mateus doesn't start, so without him there's very little impetus. And then they bring him on, and then a couple of minutes later they take Svejshok off, so it's like we can only have one really attacking player playing in this game. And they just didn't really go forward, and it was so easy for Sanfrecce to defend against. It was a really toothless display from Nagoya, and Nagoya, I thought, had been in reasonable form coming into this game, so I don't necessarily understand the way that they set the team up, and yeah, they dropped out of third place as a result of it. It was a disappointing result for them, but it might be bad news for FC Tokyo midweek if they're just saving themselves for that game.
Yes, well, we'll wait and see on that front. Obviously, Granfrecce's allegiances were split in this game, so I'm not sure whether he felt satisfied at the full-time whistle or, a bit frustrated from the Grampus half of himself, as obviously they've cost themselves the chance to stay third in the table, feeling his frustration coming through. Granfrecce says simply, ACL question, Vissel will finish third. Any objections? I think it's obviously way too early to call, Sam, and as I've just said 5 minutes ago, I would still think Reds have a very decent chance. 3 points behind both Kobe and Nagoya, and I guess we're going to have to give up on Antlers clicking into gear and putting a run of wins together. So maybe it is down to just these three for third spot. But we're going to readdress this when somebody else is in third spot in 2 weeks, aren't we, Sam?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I should give up on Kashima, but there's still so much quality in that team. They're only 4 points adrift, so I'm not going to rule them out entirely. So I think we've still got a good four-way race there. Kobe, yeah, probably are the favourites at the moment. And they're definitely, when you think of Osaka, Muto and Iniesta, I mean, it's tough to look past them going into the ACL places. But this is Vissel Kobe, and they do like to fall apart whenever it comes to it. They've never really been this high on the table, at least in my memory of watching the J-League. So you never really know. I think it's open, but yeah, Kobe at the moment are the favourites. But who knows, again, in 2 weeks' time, it could be anything. It could be Reds in third.
Absolutely. And so before we leave this game, when I saw Asano's goal, I thought absolutely terrific finish in the only spot in the goal where Langerak couldn't reach it. Akakichino 11, for mine, is maybe a little bit harsh on Langerak. I don't know what you think, Sam. Akakichino 11 says the goal was from such a tight angle that a keeper should have been able to pick up that ball easily, don't you think? I will respectfully disagree, Akakichino 11. I think it was a terrific strike from Asano. As I say, the only spot in the goal where Langerak was guaranteed that he couldn't get it. I don't know, Sam, you think any differently?
No, I'm with you. I thought it was a terrific goal from Asano. I mean, he had the Kimoto in front of him was shielding, and Langerak was moving across as he should do to cover his near post, and it was just perfectly placed. I mean, as the ball is struck, Langerak, I think he's got his weight on his right foot, so there's no real chance for him to get across. So I thought it was a terrific effort from Asano. I think the blame may have been apportioned to Kimoto, who was tight but not really tight enough. He probably should have got a block in that position, but I think you've got to give a lot of credit to the striker. It was there's nowhere else in the goal he could have put it, and Langerak wouldn't have saved it. So it was a terrific goal, I thought, and I think it's a bit harsh on Langerak. If it went in at his near post, then absolutely blame the goalkeeper, but yeah, the way that Asano put that, I think there was very little he could have done about it.
All right, then. Well, thanks, Akakichino 11, anyway, for that question, and indeed your range of discussion points throughout the episode. We've still got a couple more to come from Graham Freche, because he's got his tail up over Genk Osaka's new logo, Sam. And Gumba supporters would probably appreciate if we just talked about their reboot for the next 10 minutes and didn't have to talk about the demolition job that Sapporo put on them at the Panasonic Stadium on Saturday. Another 5-1 scoreline in match day 31. From a Sapporo perspective, we're definitely saving the best till last on this week's episode. But, well, Gumba, we wondered whether they'd turned a corner after last week's win. I don't know, maybe Johnny will be scrambling to come back on the podcast now, Sam, and reverse the mojo again, because this was absolutely abject from Gumba. And, I mean, again, we don't want to take anything away from Sapporo. They've probably been threatening a performance and an outburst like this for the past month or so. And it was a day for them where pretty much everything clicked, but anything that could have gone wrong did for Gumba.
Yeah, because that's exactly right. And it is a sort of performance that you could get from Sapporo, but not often it clicks in the way that it did. In this game, everything went well for them. Kaneko, again, was terrific. Just the pressure that he puts in and his finishing is so good. But it was just every player in that team played to their highest potential, and, yeah, Gamba did not. And it was a lot down to the senior players in that team. That it's not like on paper, this is a really good team at Gamba. They finished, what was it, second last season? But you've got Kim Yong-guan playing so poorly in this game. He gives it away for the first goal. I think he's involved in at least three of the goals that went against them. Fujiharu as well, very experienced defender, but it was so easy to get in behind him, and his positioning was all over the place. Just between those two, that's where Sapporo got a lot of their joy, with Kaneko and Fernandez. And it's just, you can't expect that from such experienced players. And in midfield, Idiguchi was awful. I mean, last season, it was getting towards the Idiguchi that we had before the 2018 World Cup. But in this game, he was just lost in midfield. The ball just kind of pinballed around him. He didn't get close to anything. He was casually chesting the ball down and giving away possession. And it's those three. And that, when a team is struggling, you want your experienced players and your better players to step up. And they absolutely didn't in this game. They were absolutely all over the place. I was speaking to Johnny before this podcast to get his thoughts on the old badge and all the controversy that had caused. But yeah, he said that one of his Gamba Sporting mates had said that this was one of the worst performances ever from a Gamba Osaka side, and it's very difficult to disagree with that.
Yeah, most definitely. And Graham Freche certainly didn't mince his words either. Yes, he says he can't remember seeing any team playing as bad as Gumba during this season. It was, pretty ordinary from start to finish. Again, Gumba supporters might want to put their fingers in their ears for the next couple of minutes as I run through the goals. It was, Yoshiaki Komai, who strode forward and fired across Masaki Higashiguchi after, as Sam said, Kim Yong-guan gave the ball away carelessly. That was in just the fifth minute, just past the half hour. It was 2-0 when Lucas Fernandez received from Komaya and slalomed through the box. It appeared he'd lost the ball twice, but yeah, he finally toe-poked past and exposed Higashiguchi. And in the space of 7 minutes either side of halftime, 2-0 became 4-0 when Tomoki Takamine smashed in a rasper for his first J1 goal 5 minutes before the break. And 62 seconds after the restart, Takuro Kaneko fired through Higashiguchi's legs from 6 yards. And Kaneko just rewards for all the hard work he's put in over the last month or so. And obviously I think he had one or two goals that disallowed by VAR in recent weeks, so great for him to get on the score sheet. Patrick headed in a Takashi Usami free kick in the 65th minute to reduce Gumba's arrears to 4-1, but their sorry day was capped off in the 88th minute when Douglas Oliveira passed the ball into the net from a tight angle on the right, from well outside the box, after Higashiguchi came charging out of his area but was never getting to a ball over the top. On a day like this, you've got a feel for Higashiguchi, Sam. I mean, he's only got himself to blame for the fifth goal, but before that, as you say, the mistakes in front of him were just compounding, and there was very, very little he could do about the first four goals, were there?
No, and he made quite a few good saves throughout that game as well to keep the scoreline down. And even this one, Kim gave the ball away first of all. The ball's then lofted over Fujiharu, runs through Treacle, getting back to it. So Higashiguchi thinks he has to come. He gets it all wrong, and it's poor goalkeeping, but you've just got to feel his frustration at what's gone on ahead of him. There's only so many times he can bail the team out. So, yeah, just altogether an awful day for Gambro Saka, because it was preceded by the new badge that, I mean, definitely in terms of the English community, language community on Twitter, they are absolutely tearing into this design. And John East tells me that it's a little bit more split in terms of the actual Gambo supporters there. Some are saying, oh, let's leave it. But no one is coming out and saying it's a great design. It's a, yeah, it's dull, let's say, and unoriginal, and not the greatest, but yeah, it was all overshadowed by the performance.
Well, yes, Graham Fritsche is really going to town on Gumba in his emails, and he says that Gumba have given up on their fans and their identity, and then they gave up on the pitch on Saturday. He asks if it's the worst logo for a football club that we've ever seen. I mean, it is very similar in many respects to Genk's, with the G forming basically the entirety of the design. But yes, the Gumba, they've justified all the different parts of the G, haven't they, Sam? What is it? There's fire coming out of the bottom, and then there's a heart in the middle, and then the top is a goal. So somebody's got on I don't know, paint or however they've put it together. It's it's I don't know if it's the worst I've ever seen, Graham Fritsche, but it's certainly you'd probably be in the top five. It's very ordinary, and as you say, Johnny's not a huge fan of it himself.
Yeah, Johnny didn't. He said it was all right. He didn't say it was like the greatest thing or anything. It was more. He wasn't quite convinced that it needed changing at all. I mean, I quite like the original badge, and I mean, it definitely screams Gambro Saka to you when you look at it. But there is this, I mean, marketers get involved, don't they? And they have to change it. I'm sure they've got reasons behind it. My biggest disappointment with it is there was seemingly no consultation with the supporters. I know there was when Shimizu changed their badge a year or two ago, it seems to have just been kind of forced on Gamba. And when you put something like this onto the fans, it doesn't seem the greatest thing in the world. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone will get used to it, and that's it. But it just doesn't scream of any excitement to me. It just seems like a very boring, plain and mundane design, and that's not really the image you want to project for a football team.
No, but it's as Graham Fritsche has kind of hinted at, it's kind of what they displayed on the pitch on Saturday against Sapporo. Again, full credit to Consadole for a terrific offensive display and a comprehensive victory. Basically, the dictionary definition of that. And both of these teams. I was going to say in mid-table at kickoff, but yeah, I mean, Gumba are obviously now a point further adrift of Kashiwa Reysol, so they're 6 points outside the drop zone, and all of the feel-good vibes after their first win in ages last week have well and truly been extinguished. So yes, they'll be back to looking over their shoulder once the league resumes after the international break. But speaking of that, we've wrapped up all 10 games from J1 Matchday 31, so let's just look ahead quickly to what's to come over the next 2 weeks. Firstly, for the Japan national team, they are two huge World Cup qualifiers. The first one is against Saudi Arabia. That's away in Jeddah on Thursday local time, but in Japan it's a 2 a.m. Friday morning. Of course, Japan played both of their opponents in this international break, Saudi Arabia and Australia, in the final round of qualifying for the last World Cup. But this particular fixture 4 years ago, was it 2017? It would have been played. It wasn't particularly instructive, I wouldn't have guessed, because Japan lost that game 1-0, but they'd already been confirmed as group winners before this game took place in the final game of the the World Cup qualification process. So, yeah, we'll obviously hope that Japan put on a better performance with a lot more on the line this coming Thursday/Friday morning, Sam. It really is a huge couple of games after both Saudi Arabia and Australia won both of their first two qualifiers, and obviously Japan had that slip up against Oman. They can't afford too many more, can they?
No, these are huge games. They probably define this period of qualifying. They might define Moriyasu's reign as well. I mean, it'd be tough for him to hang on if Japan went on and lost both of these games. But yeah, they've picked a reasonable squad now that Furuhashi's thankfully back fit, because it was looking like Furuhashi and Kubo were going to both be out for these games. Thankfully, Furuhashi has pulled through and been added to the squad, so there is still a bit of quality going forward. And Osako looks like he's coming into good form. So yeah, hopefully we have a better performances than the kind of dross that we saw last month. But yeah, they're tough to call, these games. I mean, away at Saudi Arabia is always going to be a difficult game. They're in reasonable form as well, and they're always difficult to beat. And then Australia, I mean, it's a kind of 50-50 game, that one. So it's just tough to call. Hopefully Japan can get through these games. If they can get away with maybe 4 points, I think that would represent a good month of action for them. But yeah, it seems, I can't see, if Japan play the way that they did against Oman and China, I can't see them winning either of these games. So yeah, but hopefully there is enough talent in that squad, so yeah, fingers crossed. What's the mood like, do you know, from the Australia side of it? Do you think, are they're confident coming to Japan?
Well, I think, yeah, this is probably their best chance, with Japan slightly wobbly, aren't they? Probably the best chance for Australia to claim World Cup qualification victory on Japanese soil. And that will come next Tuesday the 12th in Saitama. Same fixture was played in the qualification process for the last World Cup. As I mentioned, Japan won 2-0 at Saitama as well, with the goals from Takuma Asano and Yosuke Idaguchi. Again, that's not particularly instructive for what's to come Yeah, obviously different squads and different managers in charge of their respective nations. But I think Australia will fancy their chances. They'll know that Japan will be returning from a testing trip to Saudi Arabia. So yeah, I can hardly think of a better opportunity from an Australian perspective to finally taste that first victory at Saitama.
Yeah, do you know where Australia are playing their first game? Did they manage to get that in the Easter tour? Or are they also travelling across from the Middle East when they play? Is it Oman?
Well, yeah, I mentioned that Japan would be returning from a testing trip to Saudi Arabia. Obviously, Australia are playing Oman in Qatar, so Australia will have to travel over from the Middle East to Japan for the game on Tuesday the 12th as well. But, I guess you Oman certainly can't be underestimated, as Japan found out to their expense in the first qualifier. So, regardless, I do think it's a really good chance for Australia to taste victory on Japanese soil. But we will wait and see. They are obviously two huge games for the Samurai Blue, and the fact that Japan are playing on the Tuesday means that we will delay the recording of next week's episode until later on in the week. It won't be a usual Monday recording, obviously, with the big game against Australia to come the next day. So we'll be back next week to round up both of those Samurai Blue qualifiers, and also what's going on in the Levain Cup semi-finals. We mentioned it off the top, but it's Nagoya FC Tokyo and Reds Cerezo on Wednesday night, and then the reverse fixtures take place on Sunday afternoon. And Sam, no rest for the wicked then. We'll both be busy over this international break, but we wouldn't have it any other way. But that's it for this week, another terrific episode, and we'll speak to you again next week.
Yeah, well, good luck for both Wednesday and Sunday. I look forward to tuning in and hearing your commentary on the Levain Cup. Hopefully, Tokyo do you proud, at least on Wednesday. Yeah, and yeah, all the best for that. Hopefully, the dog doesn't make too many cameos.
Yes, thank you very much, mate. Yeah, I think it's worked out well for me that I don't have to commentate on Tokyo in the second leg. At least they'll hopefully have some hope left after Wednesday night, and then I'll have to find out what happens after the Cerezo Urawa second leg. But we will leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would very much like to thank Graham Freche and Akaki Chino 11 for their questions for us to consider on this week's episode. Both of them are patrons of the J-Talk podcast. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. We'd obviously like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support. And listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the Samurai Blues, two huge World Cup qualifiers. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yes, 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 yes.